here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your hosts, Chris Mannix and Chris Herring.
And we are back. Crossover NBA podcast. Chris Mannix joined this week by my colleague Chris Herring. And Chris, there's a lot of playoff basketball to talk about as we head towards the second round. Most of those second round matchups are set with a few left to be decided. But I want to use this podcast to sort of look ahead to some of the teams, the off seasons of some of the teams that have been eliminated here, because I think there's some really interesting off seasons ahead for a few of these. I want to start with Milwaukee. About as disappointing as you can get for the Milwaukee Bucks. Obviously, the Giannis commentary went viral this week, where Giannis was pretty open and pretty honest in explaining why he didn't view this Bucks season as a failure. But when you're the one seed, and when you get beat by the 8 seed, it's kind of a failure. That's kind of what it is, if you look at it that way. So, a tough season in Milwaukee. Best record in the NBA, but they get beat in the first round by the 8-seeded Miami Heat. And now they have a pretty interesting offseason ahead of them. And I think the first decision that the Bucks have to make this offseason involves Mike Budenholzer. This may already be decided by the time some people listen to this podcast, but as we record this on Friday morning, we don't know the fate of Mike Budenholzer. He has a couple of years left on his contract in Milwaukee, but when you have back-to-back seasons of playoff disappointment that end, in the case of last season in the second round, this season in the first round, the coach gets put on the hot seat. Now, Mike Budenholzer has plenty of equity in Milwaukee because he won a championship 3 years ago. But the question is going to be, has that earned him enough to get him another season on the bench in Milwaukee? So let me ask you this, Chris. How tough a decision do you think this is going to be for the Bucks front office?
I would think that you would think that they'd have this figured out kind of quickly. I mean, sure, relationships play into it. You would imagine every relationship takes the next step when you win a championship. But on the other hand here, they did give him the security of giving him the contract. And so it's not like he's walking away with nothing if you do make that step. I also kind of feel like it's the easiest step to make as opposed to trying to figure out, like, roster-wise what you do here. There are a few things you could do. Chris Middleton is one of those things, I imagine. Like, you're coming up on a decision here of whether you're going to give him, I imagine, considerable money to stay around pretty soon. And maybe you don't want to do that, but if you decide to move on from him, I'm not really sure what you're getting back if you keep him around and then move him.
Well, but before we get to Middleton, though, like, is Budenholzer the guy in your mind?
I think that's the easiest decision to make, is to move on from him. I'll never forget, and I've said this before, maybe on this podcast, I've said it before. I remember a friend of mine in the media saying, like, after Budenholzer won the title, like, you should just leave now. Like, because had they not won, people were going to make that argument that Budenholzer should be the guy to go.
If Giannis, they didn't win enough in the second round, if KD's foot had been half an inch back behind the line, there's a pretty good chance Mike Budenholzer would have lost his job.
Exactly. So when you have that sort of argument being made then, and then you do win, and part of the reason you're able to get there is because Giannis came back from an injury sooner than we all expected that year. Like, there was a lot of weird stuff. And I feel like there have been a lot of times now where when they haven't gotten done in the playoffs. Remember, 4 years ago when Bud had, like, that like he would bring Giannis in and out for 30 to 40 seconds of game time and then bring him back in. And it was like, what are we doing here? Like, this is maybe the best player in the world. You just need to play your best guys for the longest amount of time. And I feel like we're still dealing with some of that. We're here, you know, Giannis is asked point blank at the end of the season, did you want to guard Jimmy there? Like, what was your take on that? And Giannis being the, if you want to call it humble, if you want to call it quiet, if you want to call it polite superstar, he is. He's like, well, of course I want to, but like, I'm not going to go outside of what my coach is asking me or telling me I should do. And so, you know, between that and also the idea of, you know, just straight up asking Giannis questions about that and him just saying like, yeah, we should have done this or we should have done that. Or yeah, we probably needed to have done more of that. That does fall at Budenholzer's feet a little bit. I'm also on record of saying that even if Giannis hadn't played a minute of this series, I would have expected that they would have won two games here. This was a Miami team that almost didn't make the playoffs at all with two chances in the play-in. And basically Giannis, you know, they didn't win a game with Giannis on the floor in this series, which is like beyond to think about that. So between that, between the fact that they came up short last year, which that one I feel a little tougher about the Budenholzer situation, but I think that combined with this year, if you want to switch things up, if you feel like maybe this is, you know, you just need something new at this point, they had the best record and didn't get out of the first round. Giannis was available for most of the series. He played very well, even despite having the injury in the middle of the series. They should have had enough to get through at least the first round. And quite frankly, I can't even imagine a realm in which we're talking about the Bucks having most of their rotation, Giannis being healthy for most of the first round, not getting out of it and imagining that Bud is back next year. I respect him. He's done very well there. He changed the trajectory of what they were doing instantly with the three-point shooting, with kind of helping Brooke transition into a different sort of player, with Giannis becoming, you know, a bona fide superstar, maybe the best player in the world. They didn't get it done, and I imagine something is going to shift. They didn't make really any changes to this roster last year. They got Joe Ingles, who was coming off the injury. They brought in Jay Crowder, who didn't play in this series much. So I imagine that at some point, unless something else big is going to happen, Budenholzer has to be probably the fall guy here. Also, because that's the lowest hanging fruit of what you can change here, I think. And they've avoided that before, but I probably feel like that probably is the next step now.
He didn't just have a bad first round series. He had a catastrophic first round series, especially in game five, where you can make the argument that Mike Budenholzer contributed to losing because of some of the decisions that he made in that game. It was subbing out Brook Lopez at the end of regulation, which, look, was a kind of attempt to match up with the personnel that Miami had on the floor. They took Bam Adebayo out. He put Brook, they took
switching, took basically, Brook Lopez to be able to switch.
Out. Switching, yeah, to be able to switch everything, whatever. But you took out maybe the defensive player of the year, you know, one of the top guys, right? Certainly Jaren Jackson won it, but Brook Lopez right there in the mix. A terrific inside player. If Brook Lopez is on the floor, pretty good chance that Jimmy Butler bucket ultimately doesn't happen. That's number one. After the Jimmy Butler shot, no timeout. 0.5 seconds left of the clock. Take your timeout. No timeout there.
Advance
the
ball.
Timeout. Advance the ball. Give yourself an opportunity to get a shot off at the end of regulation. And then overtime, not a single timeout. Does not call timeouts in overtime. Two timeouts in his pocket for that five-minute period. He didn't call a damn one of them. And that was crazy. And then, you know, the piece de resistance is the, you know, throughout the series, as you pointed out, not putting Giannis on a guy that is cooking your perimeter defenders. Jimmy Butler averaged 37 points in this series. In game four, he had 56. In game five, he had 42. Like, that's a flashing red light saying switch things up, make changes, put one of your best, one of the best defensive players in the league with length on him and give him something different to look at. Jrue Holiday, great defender, wasn't getting it done in this series. Giannis should have taken a turn on it. So this is the kind of series that gets a coach fired. Like, if they had lost and, you know, Budenholzer hadn't been a variable here, you can point to the fact that Giannis basically missed three games as being reason why they lost. But of the course, way that game five played out, that was just a disaster in every possible way for Mike Budenholzer. So they have to make a decision there. They also have to make a decision on some of these roster spots. You mentioned Chris Middleton. He has a player option for next season at about $40 million. I don't know what he's going to do with that. He's not going to make $40 million on the open market, but he can probably get a long-term deal that significantly exceeds that from Milwaukee or somebody else. So he's 31 years old. He's going to be looking for a four-year deal. Maybe they cut it down to three. But he's going to be expensive. And Middleton's going to go into this offseason knowing that he basically has the Bucks over the barrel here, right? Like, because if they don't pay him, you can't replace him. They've got like $150 million in committed salaries. You can't go out there and get somebody else. Middleton has the Bucks between a rock and a hard place. How do you see that situation playing out?
I hate these. Like, even just as an objective person that has no bearing, or, you know, my life's not impacted by it. I've watched so many situations where teams are at contender status, or a contender, in this case, a champion, a former champion. You know, I understand Giannis is locked in on a supermax, so he's not fundamentally on the clock, but it doesn't look good to move away from someone that is as integral as he is. Also, let's keep in mind, for several years now, remember, was it 2 years ago that we were having these stupid arguments about whether Giannis was the lead guy in Milwaukee from an offensive standpoint because he's not a great jump shooter, so like he's not necessarily their lead creator, their lead clutch basket guy. I want to say it was Kendrick Perkins that was making that argument a few years ago. And obviously Giannis has done enough to prove that he's that guy. But Middleton is still really important. And frankly, what he does with Giannis in a pick and roll and everything else, he's huge for this team. The team was very, very mediocre defensively, offensively, I'm sorry, before he came back. So he's huge. I mean, I saw the report floating around today from former SI writer Jake Fisher about the idea that maybe the Rockets would float something like a Jalen Green to try to get involved. I can't imagine the Bucks wanting to go for that. If they're on the clock for like winning another title, I'm not really sure what Jalen Green does. Does it extend your run? Potentially, sure. But we also spent all year, you wrote about this, we spent all year talking about Houston and kind of how not ready, not prepared they looked. It takes a long time sometimes for young guys to learn how to play winning basketball. I don't think that's the move. I think, it's probably likeliest from where I sit that the Bucks just kind of keep things as is with their core, that they maybe slot out Budenholzer for someone else and try to bring in somebody else at a high level. It's really hard to move out a player that is that tight with Giannis, that has that kind of chemistry with Giannis, who understands the defensive schemes and everything else. I don't see it as likely, but I also think that, you know, between what you're saying and the other alternatives, you would get a better return on someone like Jrue Holiday. And I think it would be brutal for them to move him because he was one of the best players in the league this year. He's one of the most balanced players in the league. He held down the fort, albeit not efficiently, last year when Middleton was out in the playoff series against the Celtics, but was, you know, he's a guy that if you need him to, he can take 20 shots a game and still be an elite defender on the other end of the court. But this was a brutal series from the standpoint of no one being able to stop Butler. And so I think everything should be on the table, but I think it's more likely that Holiday and then Middleton are back and that they just try to fix the Budenholzer issue more so than moving Middleton right now.
Wait, so just to backtrack there, the Jalen Green to Milwaukee for what? Middleton?
I'll be honest in saying that I probably could try to get a slightly better understanding of it, but it was saying essentially, if I understood it correctly, that the Rockets would be willing to move off of Jalen Green to try to bring someone in to accelerate what they're doing, like a Middleton. Now that also
would be insane. That would be insane for Houston. Insane. Like, there's been a lot of stuff associated with Houston that sounds completely wonky, starting with the James Harden stuff.
But that's probably where you're starting, though, is like if you feel like that's, and by the way, how odd, like that has to be one of the oddest storylines I've heard. It's not to knock it down or say it's not true, but if you feel like that's a done deal, which by the way, how many tampering conversations are we going to be having later this summer if that comes to actually happen? But if you're going to bring him in and he's going to be a main ball handler for you, that's going to happen at the expense of their young ball handlers.
If the Rockets sign James Harden, they should fold the franchise. Like, fold the franchise. Like, everyone.
Who knows, but
everyone
should be
fired.
You brought in Udoka. You brought in Udoka, so it's like
no, Udoka's trying like, to do something. Like, yes, but Udoka is, look, putting aside the baggage, which is a separate conversation, Udoka as a coach is the right fit for that Rockets team. You know, he is going to figuratively beat the crap out of these guys on a daily basis. He is going to verbally slap them around on a daily basis. Those press conferences that Ime Udoka holds in the first 2 months of the season are going to be must-see TV because he is going to tell the whole world what sucks about his team. And that's the right thing to do. It worked in Boston. Like, you got a bunch of young guys with talent in Houston. You got to break them of some bad habits. You got to discipline them. You got to get them, you know, trending in the right direction. That's the way you should go. If you accelerate what? You had 22 wins last year, which is the high watermark from the last 3 years. Like, what are you accelerating? Like, what gas pedal are you stepping on that's going to get your team to a playoff spot? I don't understand that. They just have to cross their fingers, cross your fingers, and hope Victor Wembanyama is wearing a Rockets uniform next year. That's all you have to do if you're interested.
That's a given, but that, I mean, look, and you would know this better. You're more of an insider from the standpoint of breaking stuff. The Harden stuff seems real enough as far as those aren't whispers.
I'm never going to believe it. I'm never going to believe it. I'm always going to believe it's leverage from Harden. I'm always going to believe it's leverage from Harden to get the big contract from Philadelphia.
And if that's the case, that's totally fair. If there's nothing to it, that's totally fair. But if that's the only way in which I can imagine anything about the potential of them moving someone like a Jalen Green, like it's way too early to give up on the kid.
Was James Harden in Vegas this week? Was that, I saw TMZ posting video of him in Vegas. Like, what?
Oh,
what
let's
are we
hope
doing?
that was old video. What are we let's doing? Hope. But let's hope.
that's wild if that turns out to be accurate. Just what I saw on TMZ. TMZ posting a video of James Harden in Vegas. Just to button up everything on Milwaukee. To bring this group back, which, look, I think is probably the safest thing to do. It's going to cost a boatload of money. You've got to find a new contract or pay Middleton the $40 million next year. Brook Lopez is a free agent. Brook Lopez is going to be an attractive free agent to a lot of teams out there. Yes, he's 35 years old, but he's coming off just another consistent, steady, healthy season where he was a top five guy in defensive player of the year. He's going to make, I don't know, $18 to $20 million per year, probably, on a three-year deal. So you have to pay him. You got a lot of money on the books here. I think we're going to find out pretty quickly if, you know, Wes Edens, who is the now lead owner of this team, and Jimmy Haslam, who's taken over the other side of the ownership group from Mark Lazary, what kind of appetite they have for spending in Milwaukee. Because this team is about to get super, super expensive and is already super, super old when you look at the rotation compared to some of the other teams in the NBA. So I think that's the biggest question. We got Budenholzer. What happens with him? That's immediate. And then over the next few months, how much money are the Bucks willing to spend? Are they willing to go to the mat to keep Chris Middleton in a Bucks uniform? Are they willing to spend to keep Brook Lopez alongside Giannis? Do they believe that this was just a bad matchup in a year where Giannis got hurt in the first round and things just didn't play out? Or do they believe this team needs a complete retooling, which is risky to do when you've got Giannis with 2 years left in his contract? So I think that's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out. All right, let's talk about the Clippers. For the fourth consecutive year of the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George era, they do not advance to the NBA Finals. Over the last 4 years, Herring, Kawhi and PG have played in 41% of the Clippers' regular season and playoff games. Three of the last 4 years, the season has ended with one or both hurt. So I guess that's the first question. I saw Bill Plaschke with the LA Times write a column saying, blow it up. Just trade these guys, which first and foremost, I don't think it's possible to get more than nickels on the dollar. But putting aside what the Clippers are going to do, which according to Lawrence Frank is to keep doubling down on all this, is that the smart move? Should the Clippers continue to invest in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George?
Yeah, partly just because I don't know what the alternative is. You just laid out the nickels on the dollar thing, which I imagine is absolutely true. Look, this is going to sound really silly. In a year where we watched Giannis get hurt, we watched Ja Morant get hurt, and I'm still blown away that that was not a playoff ending injury for him, given that it was the same hand that had already been injured for him. We've watched Fox fracture his fingertip. We've seen Tyler Hero out. We've seen Randall out, in and out of the lineup so far for the Knicks over just the last few weeks, even before the playoffs started. And Anthony Davis is always a question mark. Draymond gets suspended every other playoff series. My point in saying all that is lightning in a bottle could be enough to win a championship. Maybe you can get lightning in a bottle. Lightning in a bottle for the Clippers would mean that their guys were actually healthy at a time where we expected them to be injured, maybe. Isn't that giving you a better chance than what the Clippers would generally have? Like, just rolling the dice on the idea that, like, maybe one year they're healthy at the same time that they could make it through a playoff series. I understand the likelihood of that is not high. The probability of that is not high. Probably never will be. I also don't know how much better the probability gets if you deal them away. You could make the argument to improve the rotation around them. The rotation around them is pretty solid, considering just like how often they have to keep that team afloat without either of those guys there. You might be able to tinker with pieces. Look, Russell Westbrook was so much better with the Clippers than I imagined he could be. Really, the only place I've ever seen him shoot 3-for-19 and be that impactful in a game, making like game-saving blocks. He seemed engaged defensively. He also had games where he was hitting threes and like making baskets and playing efficiently, playing within a system, realizing that like he's not the guy, but when they need him to step up, he seemed to have a better sense of when to put his foot on the pedal and when to break, which we're not used to for a while, have not been used to seeing that version of Russell Westbrook from an IQ standpoint. So I say all that to say, and you've made this point before, Steve Ballmer is as wealthy as they come, even among NBA owners, basically. I'm going to roll the dice with this because I just don't really see what other alternative gets you closer. We've already had the conversation about the idea that they're opening an arena soon.
Yeah.
We already have seen, quite frankly, even this past week, that the team is going to do what they need to do from a certain standpoint of just protecting the money they have coming in. I saw a lot of people complaining about Lawrence Frank's press conference yesterday or earlier in the week or whenever it was about, he was asked point blank, when did you guys know Kawhi had torn his meniscus? And he said, after game two. They listed him as out for games 3 and 4, or games 4 and 5, or whatever it was, but did that while saying that he had a sprain, or you know, whatever it was, a sprain, a strain, whatever it was, while knowing that he had torn his meniscus. And I saw countless Clippers fans, yes, they exist, saying, wow, so the organization knew and just didn't say it out loud because they wanted to protect ticket sales. They wanted to make sure people still showed up to games to make it seem like there was a chance. I don't want to speak for the Clippers. They can respond to that if they want to, but it does look a certain way. I don't doubt for a minute that they want to hold things together as they are rolling out something as big as a stadium that they're going to, a sparkling, gleaming arena that they're going to have. So I don't see what option is better for them right now. I just don't think you're getting much from anybody unless you have a team out there that just kind of feels like they can rehabilitate these guys to health, to where it's not a problem. And that would be a hell of a risk to take. Maybe there's some training staffs in the league that are good about that, but I just kind of feel like the rest of Kawhi's career is probably going to look like you're handling him with kid gloves as far as injuries. I don't know what other choice you really have. Some people say ramp him up. Would you really trust his health at this point if you're playing him a lot more aggressively when he plays a couple games in a series and that's too much? 40 minutes, 42 minutes, whatever it is. So I think you have to keep it together. Would you disagree? What would you do?
No, I think that they have no choice but to keep it together, in part because there is very limited trade value for two players, and this applies probably more to Kawhi than it does to Paul George, but two players that are, you know, annually injured and only have one more guaranteed year left on their contracts. So they have no choice here but bring these guys back. The choice they have, though, is whether or not to extend them. And this is something that Lawrence Frank kept the door open for during his press conference, said that they will have conversations about that as the weeks and months move forward. Look, the number attached to a Kawhi Leonard extension is like $200 million over 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that. He's going to be 32 years old by the time next season starts. I don't know how you commit 4 years and four more years on top of next season. So 5 years and $200+ million to a player like that. Same thing with Paul George, yeah, who, look, some of his injuries have been kind of bad luck. You know, he hurt the knee at the end of the regular season. He's less chronically injured, I think, than Kawhi Leonard is. But still, he's going to be, I believe, 33 when next season starts. I think he's 33 next week. And that's, do you give four extra years to, you know, Paul George in this situation? You mentioned this. What hangs over the head of the Clippers is opening this Intuit Dome in Inglewood. I would imagine that Steve Ballmer would be much happier going into the new arena with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George headlining a championship contending team than, say, Terrence Mann and Ivica Zubac headlining a plucky, maybe get into the play-in mix kind of team. But, you know, now you're starting to blend things together here. You start to blend basketball decisions in with business decisions. The good basketball decision is to say to Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, let's see how next year goes. All right, let's figure it out. See how healthy you are, how healthy you are, how far we go, and then we'll decide end of next season if we want to, you know, re-sign you guys. And they can still give them more money basically than everybody else. Mm-hmm. But the business decision might be to pay these guys to guarantee that when the 2024-2025 season starts, both those guys are in uniform. Now, I think that would be, if it costs them 4 years, $200 million, that to me would be a catastrophic mistake. Because I love Kawhi's game. I've said for weeks now that when Kawhi's healthy, those first couple of games when he looked healthy, like, there's probably nobody I want in the playoffs on my team more than that guy. But this is not a one-year thing, a two-year thing, a three-year thing. That knee is a ticking time bomb. And I know they like to say, oh, no, the meniscus doesn't have anything to do with the ACL. Okay, not a doctor, call it bullshit, though. All right? Like, if you've got that many issues with a knee, somehow, some way, they're all commingled there. So and Kawhi, they didn't commit to a treatment, but something like this, you'd imagine surgery is going to be needed to correct it. So I just think it would be such a mistake to pay these guys. As talented as they are, you can't attach yourself to two guys that for three of the last four postseasons have not been playing together at the end of them. That's just my two cents on that.
I agree. And I think, look, it's interesting. I've seen a couple examples in the NBA over the last 4 years, of teams doing contingent extensions. We saw it with Embiid. We've seen it with Zion now, as far as, like, you know, they're paying a lot of money on paper, but it ties into, like, how often are you available? How many games do you play? What awards do you win? That would be a wonderful thing to put in place here, but I could also imagine that if those are the contingencies, that these guys might not want to sign that, because it's certainly Kawhi, because, I mean, how many years out of the last five or six now have we just now seen that he doesn't ever get to play, or he doesn't play until much, much later. He doesn't really play in any back-to-backs until we get to this point in the season. So I can imagine that those aren't really savory sorts of deals to sign for them. And also, maybe if they were to be on the open market, maybe another sort of team that is more desperate would actually sign them to something where they wouldn't have those contingencies in place. And rest assured that their agents are going to know whether that's the case. So it's a risky proposition either way. I would also be interested to see, like, if they did just wipe the slate clean in the next year or two, Ballmer's willing to spend. And I imagine that, you know, a new arena, yes, you're going to play second fiddle to the Lakers always, but I imagine that there would be takers if Ballmer is there, and no question that the organization is healthier than it's been with a not completely toxic owner and other sorts of stuff like that, a new arena, that there would be some glitz and glam around this team, even if Kawhi and Paul George weren't there, which is the first time we can really say that. So it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be one of the most interesting situations in the league, similar to when they came in. Maybe not with all those high hopes of when they first came in. I probably would have guessed that they would have gotten a championship. and had higher hopes for them than the Lakers initially when LeBron went there without AD. But I think that they have to go into it with an open mind, at least for next year, of just keeping the guys there, and I think they will.
Yeah, good basketball decision is letting them play out this contract. And look, if these guys don't play up to a level where somebody out there is going to give them a long-term deal, they might just opt in, and you'll have them anyway for that contract. But if they decide to opt out, the worst-case scenario is you just cleared $90 million off your books. Like, and you can start to build this thing again from the ground up. Obviously, it's a bitter pill to swallow. You gave up a lot to get Paul George. You traded a lot of assets over the last couple of years. It's a rebuild that you're going into. But if you're looking for the pathway to a championship and not just the pathway to a second round, that may be ultimately the way they have to go. All right, let's talk about the Cavaliers here. Disaster series against the Knicks. Disaster. Donovan Mitchell, 43% from the floor, 28% from three. Darius Garland, great game two, solid game four. But other than that, he was bad. Jared Allen couldn't grab a rebound. Isaac Okoro couldn't make a shot. It does sound, and I want to play some sound here from Kobe Altman, who just had his press conference this week. It does sound like the Cavs are going to double down now on this young core. They're not going to give up and do anything drastic. Here's Kobe Altman on allowing this thing to grow organically.
Are you focusing back to what do we have in the house? And how excited are you about those guys and their upside and their development? They're just getting started. They're just getting started. And I'm not going to put it past Evan to be able to make some threes over the course of his career. But he's actually going to be a real floor spacer for us. That might be year four or five. We don't know. And so that's why you don't overreact to this one series. Knowing what you have in the house and knowing that you have the runway you do have, we will look at all opportunities like we always have. But this group, we're super proud of, and we're going to invest in this group and give them the runway they deserve.
So, Chris, this is probably the right move. You know, you've got a bunch of young guys. You don't break it up if they don't succeed their first time in the playoffs together. Is this a Cavs team that, you know, was exposed like with something that could be problematic long term, or was this a Cavs team that just didn't have enough experience to match up in the playoffs?
I think they were exposed. I mean, and that's not to say that you can't roll the team back in relatively the same form. Like, I think, look, we've gotten to a point now where people want to see heads roll immediately. And I think it's a little bit too far gone in my mind, as far as people always just kind of clinging to that or immediately thinking that one year after they don't win a championship. In this case, a young team in their first playoff go around, people thinking that J.B. Bickerstaff needs to be fired and this and trading Jared Allen. Look, I think that they probably need to give some thought to that, because I think the Knicks just really embarrassed them. I think most of us picked the Cavs. I pay a lot of attention to the Knicks. I've said a couple times I think that they could realistically be contenders to win this whole thing, and I still thought the Cavs should have been favored here. Between home court advantage, between the fact that their defense was more elite, and the Knicks embarrassed them. I think some of that was scheme. I was stunned that the Knicks were so good on the offensive glass. They're basically the best offensive rebounder in the league, one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the league with Mitchell Robinson. But the fact that Mitchell Robinson had almost more offensive rebounds than Jared Allen and Evan Mobley had total rebounds between the two of them in the concluding game, the fact that they so decisively won the rebound battle, the fact that the points off turnovers were just out of whack throughout this series, the fact that aside from game two, the Knicks just looked so much more physical. Julius Randle was coming off an ankle injury and was like banging Evan Mobley around, to the point where it really sounded like the Cavs, frankly, were complaining about it after game one. This was a team that had no sense of what the physicality was going to be like. And so that requires a shift. It's a mindset shift. It is a preparation shift. It is a you need to get in the weight room shift. And I think on some level, it does raise the question of, like, how do you change the look of this team? They did not have enough depth in this series. They did not have enough guys they could turn to from a shooting standpoint. They started Caris LeVert in the series, which left them with almost nothing off the bench. You mentioned Isaac Okoro, who kind of went back and forth. It was weird. He was maybe their best option on Jalen Brunson, but also was coming off the bench and also at times was not getting off the bench until far too late, in my opinion. And frankly, J.B. Bickerstaff let Darius Garland take his crack at Jalen Brunson a little bit too much, in my opinion, because they really needed to be putting two on Jalen Brunson. But because they did it that way, it left Mitchell Robinson wide open to just kind of offensive rebound every single miss. And, you know, it left Evan Mobley and Jared Allen out of position all the time. And so it was weird to see them look like not quick enough, not strong enough. They probably do need more wing presence. And it makes me think like, okay, if you're the number one defense in the league and you've got two all-star caliber guards and you've got two all-star caliber bigs, but not really a dependable wing player that you trust to defend and you trust to score. This is the question that you, me, everybody around this team asked, was that, do you have a good enough fifth guy? And it looked like the answer was no. They've got an abundance of good bigs and good guards, like all-star level, but not a fifth guy or not enough depth coming off that bench. So that's something that I'm curious to see. Like, what would you get if you were to try to redeem a Jaren Allen for something else? I don't think I would be looking to move Garland, but I think
Jared Allen to me, moving him is dangerous because I don't think that Mobley's ready to be a five. I just think he's too small, too thin, and they don't have, like, who do you plug in that four spot afterwards? I mean, maybe somebody you acquire for Jared Allen, but.
And maybe that would be it. You'd get a 3-4 type guy to fill that slot, but it's risky. And I think your original question was like, do you feel like you have to change something? No, you don't have to, but you definitely have to go into next year with a different mindset. Like, okay, now you have this experience of being in the playoffs, knowing what it's like, being against a team that has some of that experience, more physicality than you, and to not just be so trustful of, oh, well, we should get this done because we've got a good net rating, we've got the best defense in the league. That wasn't enough here. It wasn't even close. Like, this will sound crazy. Obviously, I'm more surprised by the Bucks thing, but I feel like this stunned me almost as much as the Bucks losing the way they did. At least the Bucks were without Giannis for, like you said, 2.5 games. The Cavs had home court advantage and were embarrassed, you know, against a team that had a little bit more experience than them, but not so much. And Randall was not even completely healthy in this series. Didn't play well necessarily for most parts of the series. Neither did Barrett until the second half of the series. Quentin Grimes didn't even play in the last two games of the series. It was a stunning defeat, and it's unusual to see a team get beat that decidedly and not even really be talking about what moves they can make. But I don't think they should fire Bickerstaff. I think Kobe Altman had the
no,
right.
No, yeah.
I mean, this is their first time being here. I think people are a little quick with that, but something needs to shift. But I'm hopeful for them. It's more of a mentality, and seriously, that it is like a weight room thing for them, that they were not physical enough, and that the strategy changes didn't come early enough in the series for them.
Yeah, look, it's ironic that the player that struggled the most was Donovan Mitchell, and he's the one that had the most postseason experience, you know, 70-some-odd games. I was shocked that he played that poorly. I was among the people that thought Donovan Mitchell would roll into Madison Square Garden and just have two great nights, just light up the Garden and remind Knicks fans that the Knicks should have gone further to acquire him last year's. But
The Knicks look really good. Makes Leon Rose look really, really smart for having held his ground. We'll see what happens in this next round. But that was
things are breaking right for the Knicks right now.
But their depth was part of what pulled them through. When we talk about Randall and Quentin Grimes and guys not being
RJ
available
Barrett.
Or not
RJ Barrett played great.
Yeah, he did.
You know, games three on, he played great. I don't think you do anything. I think you go out, you try to find a shooter. You've got the big exception at about $12 million. You got the small one, which I think is around 2 or 3. You've got some financial flexibility to work with. You obviously should go re-sign Caris LeVert. I think he's necessary for them. He's an offensive-oriented player who, you know, early on in that series was effective. So I just think you maintain the status quo and you keep trying to build, and you hope that this experience will motivate these guys over the next 3 months in the offseason, whether it's weight room, skills work, mentality, whatever it may be. I don't think you go and, you know, spin Isaac Okoro out for a shooter. I don't think you break up Jared Allen and Mobley. What this series does, what struck me during this series, I tweeted about it and people kind of killed me for it, but sitting there, I'm like,
I saw that.
Well, I get killed a lot. I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the Cavs get destroyed rebounding.
Yeah.
I'm watching nobody come off the bench and be able to shoot the basketball. Mm-hmm. They had a guy that proved in playoffs that he could do that. Kevin Love was on the damn team like
yeah,
2 months
that was
ago.
So weird to me.
Like
yeah,
you know, yeah. People like Kevin Love asked out, and the Cavs had no choice. Of course, they had a choice. You always have a choice. Was it a risk that Kevin Love could potentially poison the locker room? Maybe, but. I don't know if Kevin Love's that kind of guy. I understand Cleveland wanted to do right by Kevin because, look, Kevin signed on there after LeBron left. He committed to the organization. He's been a good player for them for the last few years. And look, Kevin is looking for another deal. Like, Kevin wants to play in the NBA after the season and doesn't want to have to sign a one-year minimum contract somewhere. But watching Kevin Love, what did he have in Game 5 against the Bucks? Like 15-7 or something like that? Like, watching him...
He had a nice game, nice series.
Like... Watching him perform for Eric Spoelstra in Miami in the first round made me wonder, why couldn't he be kept around to perform for J.B. Bickerstaff and the Cavs in the first round of their playoff series? I know you can't foresee like Dean Wade not being a factor, you know, after the way he played up until when Kevin Love was let go. But they let Kevin Love go for zero. Just let him walk. Goodbye. They got nothing in return for him. Miami is getting what Cleveland should be getting or should have been getting out of Kevin Love. And I'm sorry, that was a mistake. That was a mistake to let sentiment come into play here. Kevin Love, maybe he doesn't make a difference in terms of winning this series, but you can't convince me that the way that series played out, that JB wouldn't have gone to him. Wouldn't have said, Kevin, see what you can do. Make some shots.
I mean,
rebound,
they went to Danny Green because of his experience and his ability to knock down a shot. And the guy hadn't played all season. So you're not wrong there. There's sometimes where, and I've been in the game now 10 years, you know, covering the league. You've been doing it even longer. Sometimes I just look up and I'm, you know, like I pay attention to the Cavs. They were the first team I wrote about all season. You were around them too. You wrote a mag feature on them. Every now and then there's something that a team does where I'm like, I don't quite understand it. Or maybe there's something there where, yeah, if a guy's kind of out of a rotation for a little bit of time, it's like, okay, these guys know their team better, obviously the executives and everything. I saw it and was kind of like, maybe I'm missing something. I remember when I wrote my feature about the Cavs to start the season, I led with Kevin Love because he was kind of the guy that throughout all this change and all this talk of like them never having had success without LeBron, you know, this century really, that Kevin Love was kind of the one guy with a pair of eyes that had seen it all, where he was part of that team when they changed the team over to bring LeBron back. He stayed through all that and watched them rebuild it and now was enjoying himself coming into this year saying, like, this is the most fun I've ever had. I don't imagine that stuff soured when they were winning 51 games. Like, the atmosphere was probably still good. I'm sure he was frustrated not playing as much as he would have liked, but they were going to be in the playoffs, and whether or not you would have had the role you like, I don't know. I was confused by it, but I remember not wanting to really write anything about it because it's like, okay, maybe the Cavs know something we don't know. And it kind of had a
blinking
sentiment. Red light of like, this might matter at some point, especially if a team with no playoff experience is going to let their guy with the most playoff experience go. It was odd. It was odd, to put it lightly, it was odd. It did. There were times where you looked at the series where he would have been almost a perfect fit. I think you always worry a little bit about him defensively, but if he can work for the Heat in a series against the the Bucks and their offense, you could imagine that Kevin Love would have helped in a lot of ways in a Knicks series where they're as physical as they are and they're making the floor smaller in spots because of your inability to shoot with the core or whoever else.
Yeah, I think the Cavs are blindsided by Kevin Love's ask because right after the trade deadline, you know, Kobe Altman did one of his state of the team media availabilities, mm-hmm. and he was asked about Kevin Love, and he said he didn't anticipate, you know, waiving Kevin Love or Kevin Love asking out, and he praised Kevin Love for being the good soldier that he's been all season. Fast forward a couple of weeks, Kevin Love's gone. I think they allowed sentiment to get in the way of success, and it's admirable in a way because they've given Kevin Love an opportunity to showcase his talent and to potentially get a new deal, whether it's in Miami or somewhere else. But I think it cost them something, and it cost them something in this series. They couldn't rebound. Kevin Love can rebound. They couldn't shoot off the bench. Kevin Love has been a shooter. I know he was hurt this year and his shooting numbers went down, but Kevin Love is a proven playoff performer and they could have used one of those in this series. All right, last team I want to talk about, Minnesota. Just a brutal year. Brutal year in Minnesota. Yeah. They trade all their assets for Rudy Gobert, and they don't do any better than they did last season in the playoffs. And it turns out one of the guys they traded that they know about, because they traded a bunch of draft picks, but Walker Kessler is probably a better player right now than Rudy Gobert. They blew 20 double-digit leads during the regular season. Their late-game execution was awful. You know, there's a part of me that wants to sit here and say, look, run this thing back and get everyone healthy, right? Karl Towns played just 29 games this year, had the worst calf injury anybody's ever had. Mike Conley was a midseason acquisition. You didn't have any time to develop any kind of chemistry with this team. So there is a part of me, Chris, that says, you know what? Let's not overreact here. It was a terrible season. Rudy Gobert is probably not the player he used to be, but let's see what happens in a full training camp with Mike Conley, with Rudy and Towns together, you know, for more than just the 20-some-odd games they were together, and bring it back. Which way do you lean on this? Not to say there is a path to breaking this thing up, because nobody's touching Rudy in that contract. You could trade Towns, but I'm not sure you get equal value back in return. Mike Conley's on the last year of his deal. Is running this whole thing back a viable option to you?
I kind of feel like you have to. And there were times where I kind of wasn't sure that was how I felt. Also this team had like some bad losing streaks where it was like it became very tempting to think that. But let's look at it here. I don't know what I really expected of them in the playoffs. I didn't expect much. That was also part of like the team's immaturity from the standpoint of the Kyle Anderson, Rudy Gobert thing, the same game that Jaden McDaniels punches, you know, a wall and is, you know, his hand is broken and then he can't play. So you're losing your best wing defender. Naz Reid got hurt with a couple weeks left in the season, who, you know, I don't think he would have won. He certainly wouldn't have won most improved, but I thought very clearly watching him, even more so than really his statistics showed, was one of the better players in the league, one of the more improved players in the league. I think that this is a team that, frankly, Conley was a better fit than D'Angelo Russell. This is a team that on paper makes more sense and just didn't really get an opportunity to show it. I also understand that before Karl-Anthony Towns was hurt, that they were kind of right around 500, not impressive. Okay, you give star players and like big contract players more time than that to gel. You have to, because you're not going to turn one of those guys over and say, let's just trade them. They're too talented to do that. They make too much money. At that point, it's too much of a sunk cost to try to pivot that quickly. Like you've staked your whole, if you're Tim Connelly, you've staked your whole presidency. And what, didn't he get an ownership stake too? Small ownership stake?
Got a piece of the franchise, here? Yeah.
Right. So like you've literally staked everything on this at that point. So it's too quick to pivot into something else. You didn't really, you can honestly, legitimately say you didn't get an honest look at what this whole team looked like, not this version of it. So I have no problem saying you've got to run it back to see what you can get out of it. I think there are certain guys on the roster that are better fits. I would love to see McDaniels take another step. I put him on my all defensive team. And he was someone that still, you know, finds himself in foul trouble because their perimeter defense was not always very good outside of him. And so he's trying to cover two guys at once, basically. So can guys mature emotionally, physically? Can they gel just from an X's no standpoint? I had higher hopes at times for Chris Finch. I had put him as my preseason favorite for coach of the year just because I was so sold that if they're going to go this all in on Rudy Gobert, they already have a sense of how they want to make this work, X's and O's wise. Like they know something that we don't know. Maybe I don't trust myself enough as a reporter whenever I see stuff where I'm like, wow, I don't know that I would have done that to trade for Rudy Gobert. Where I don't know if I would have done that with Kevin Love, but I still am a believer that there's got to be more there to it. And it did feel like they found something toward the end of the season, in the second half even, before Towns was back, that maybe works. But who knows? Maybe there were enough signs on the wall that Gobert and Towns won't work, but I definitely would run this back. I don't think that you have really any other choice but to see if it can work with those two guys as Twin Towers.
Yeah, the only real option you have is to trade Karl Towns. And there's a market for him, of course.
Absolutely there would be, yeah.
A robust one. But you trade Towns, and what are you going to get back in return? Are you looking for ancillary pieces to build around Anthony Edwards and keep Gobert in the middle and Mike Conley for one more year? Are you looking for another superstar back in return? Are you trying to do like Karl Towns for Bradley Beal? Not that Bradley Beal would okay a trade to Minnesota, but I just don't know if you're going to get back real value in return. I think the vision that Tim Conley had of Rudy Gobert partnering with Karl Towns and finding success on both ends of the floor, it could still be realized, right? Like if you get these guys together for 60 plus games, you could still see the vision that you had for this team. My greater concern with that vision is that I think Rudy has regressed pretty significantly. You watch some of these games late in the season, postseason, the respect for Rudy Gobert shot blocker is not as strong as it used to be. It's still there to a degree, but you see guys attacking Rudy Gobert a lot more than you did. Before, you had to have your head in a swivel where Rudy was out there on the floor. Weak side, strong side. Like, you had to be aware of what he was doing. Now, I'm seeing a lot of guys put their head down, go to the rim, you know, attack him. They're seeing something there. Defenders are seeing something. Coaches are seeing something with Rudy. And if you're starting to see a regression now, it's not going to get better. Like, Rudy every year, and he did it again at his exit interview this year, talks about, I'm going to get back and do different things and be back and stronger than ever next year. All right, that's a great attitude to take. But I'm worried that Rudy's regression might be too much for Minnesota to overcome to get to the kind of deep playoff run level they're trying to get to. I don't know if you saw the same things in Rudy or if the numbers back that up, but you certainly, from the eye test, you saw teams attacking Rudy a lot more than they used to.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I think that the team as a whole, it's a weird dichotomy to go from being like, let's try to make this work with Towns and Gobert, and then all of a sudden asking Gobert to go back to what he was. Maybe in some ways that should make him more comfortable. He was not the dominant, just flat out dominant. There were stretches in times where, again, for six games at a time, he did look like that guy. There were times where he didn't. There, frankly, I was kind of more concerned with the idea, and maybe it was just heat of the moment and like the pressure to make it into the playoffs or to try to get one of the top six spots or whatever, that it just looked like sometimes the guys didn't like each other. And maybe that was just flare-ups that happened in the heat of the moment. A respect factor that just, it's never felt like the league as a whole respects Rudy Gobert. In the same way that we see sometimes with like the way people gravitate toward Giannis more and Embiid more, and the players really love those guys seemingly. And you rarely hear anybody say Jokic is the best player in the world. That there's more of a respect factor for certain guys. It's never really, I don't know if it was the Donovan Mitchell stuff or if it was the, you know, the COVID stuff, if it's the European stuff and the idea that the perception that Rudy is soft. I'm not sure what it is, what it was. But I mean, Rudy is starting to get a little bit older too. He's playing with a team of guys that they have potential defensively. You see when Anthony Edwards decides he wants to step it up, he can really defend. When he's really just locked in, he can really defend. He's with a group of guys that, like, between Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels, like, they've got potential to be one of the better set of wings in the league, locked in defensively every night. Those two and Gobert, and maybe this is just me, I still remember Karl Anthony Towns at Kentucky just being dominant defensively. Like, he is one of the more curious cases for me defensively that I've ever seen as far as something that I imagined would absolutely translate at the pro level that just didn't. And we heard about, okay, well, he doesn't make sense in Thibodeau's scheme. Thibs' scheme doesn't make sense. Okay, he's not coaching him anymore. So I'll never quite understand what it is that doesn't compute for this team. This was just one year. They weren't totally healthy. I definitely want to run it back. For them to run it back to see what everything is and what they can make of everything. But Yeah, Gobert being more dominant would certainly help defensively to try to help them get to where they want to go. If he's not going to be that, the Walker Kessler part of this just looks more and more and more brutal because he, I mean, he put up better rim protection metrics than Rudy did this year.
He did.
And that he was a rookie without the discipline. You would imagine without the discipline that Rudy has and has been known for. But this was just such an interesting year all the way around, from surprises like that to now we're talking about with the Bucks and the Heat to still figuring out like who's going to win this league this year. Just so much to think about.
Walker Kessler. That's a name that will ring in the minds of Minnesotans for a long time if this doesn't come together next season. Chris, good stuff, man. We will be back here next week talking about the second round of the playoffs, scheduled to start this weekend. We'll do that then, my friend.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.